Good afternoon, sir. What is your name?
Charles T. Grimes.
Okay. The Honorable Mr. Wilker Wentz will be doing the hearing, sir, so just hold on. He'll be ready for you in just a moment, sir.
All right. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir. Hold on one second. Can you hear me clearly?
Yes, sir.
Can you state your full name and ABC number for the record?
Charles T. Grimes, 236814.
Thank you, sir, and good afternoon. You're appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for a revocation hearing regarding your community supervision. This hearing is regarding the four alleged violations listed on the warrant of arrest. You should have been given a form notifying you of this hearing at least 5 days ago. I see that you signed that form on July 5th, 2018. Is that correct, Mr. Grimes?
Yes, sir.
That form listed your hearing rights. One of those rights is that you could hire at your expense a lawyer to represent you. Seeing no attorney with you, are you representing yourself today, sir?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. I would like to introduce you to the members of the board conducting the hearing. I'll start with the opposite side of the bench today, but on the opposite side from me, the far end is the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson. After him is the Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse. At the center of the bench is our esteemed board chairman, Dr. C.T. Wright. Next to me is the Honorable Mr. David Neal, and my name is Lou Quinones. I'll be serving as the panel lead for this hearing. Also in the room is our community corrections officer, Mr. Westby, and he'll be representing the Department of Corrections as well as your parole officer. Now, before we get started, I need to swear you and your supporters, because you have two supporters in the room, and Mr. Westby in. So, Mr. Grimes, Ms. Teresa Grimes?
Yes.
And Ms. Maureen Lutzky?
Yes.
Mr. Westby? Do you all solemnly swear to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth, so help you God, or so you affirm? And I'll begin with you, Mr. Charles Grimes.
Yes, sir.
Ms. Grimes?
Yes, sir.
Ms. Lutzky?
Yes, sir.
And Mr. Westby?
I do.
Thank you. Mr. Grimes, this hearing will be conducted in two phases. Phase one will be to determine if you violated the conditions of supervision, with phase two, deciding whether your supervision should be continued or revoked. So keep in mind there's a motion that passes us from phase one to phase two. When I read the allegations to you, you need to respond whether or not it is true or false. And I see that you have a departmental number suggesting that there may be or may have been a separate case outside of the Department of Corrections. So being as that this hearing is recorded, when I ask you whether these allegations are true or false, you'll have a choice of saying whether or not the allegation is true, false, or you wish to remain silent. The reason why we give you the third choice, again, is because it's recorded, and parts of the criminal justice system can subpoena this recording, whether it's the prosecution or the court itself, or perhaps your defense. And we want to make sure that you're protected from anything that you might say in this in this hearing. So, again, when I read the allegations to you, you need to respond whether it's true or false, or you wish to remain silent. If you believe the allegation is false, the board will take testimony from the Department of Corrections and we can talk about it. But keep in mind, the board members will make the final determination whether or not you violated the conditions of supervision. Do you understand what I just explained to you?
Yes, sir.
Well, keep in mind, we're only in the first phase of the hearing, so I will begin phase one by reading from the warrant of arrest. According to the warrant, you violated the conditions of supervision and have lapsed or probably about to lapse in the criminal ways of company as follows. Allegation number one, violation of condition number seven, as demonstrated by your failure to submit a urine specimen for drug testing on or about December 23rd, 2016, for the task individual testing compliance summary dated December 30th, 2016. Mr. Grimes, is this true, false, or do you wish to remain silent?
It's false.
Thank you, sir. Allegation number two, Violation of condition number 5 is demonstrated by threatening physical harm towards staff at the Mill Q Club located at 607 South Mill Avenue, Tempe, Arizona, on about December 24, 2016. Mr. Grimes, is this true, false, or do you wish to remain silent?
False.
Thank you, sir. Allegation number 3, violation of condition number 5 is demonstrated by your making a fist and lunging towards a staff member at the Mill Q Club located at 607 South Mill Avenue, Tempe, Arizona, on or about December 24, 2016. Mr. Grimes, is this true, false, or do you wish to remain silent? Thank you. And Mr. Grimes, the last allegation, allegation number 4, violation of condition number 5, is demonstrated by your hampering the normal operation of the Mill Q Club located 607 South Mill Avenue, Tempe, Arizona, on or about December 24, 2016. Mr. Grimes, is true, false, or do you wish to remain silent?
I wish to remain silent.
Okay, thank you. Okay, now based on the fact that you wish to remain silent on the fourth allegation, we're still going to hear that allegation read by a community corrections officer. You will not respond to it, but the board will review the allegation. And based on your submission of false for the first three allegations, we're going to hear those allegations read by a community corrections officer, and then we'll ask you a few questions before we pass from phase one to phase two. Okay, sir?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Grimes. Mr. Turner.
Mr. Westby.
What's that?
Mr. Westby.
Oh, you know, I've been so good. I'm sorry about that. Mr. Westby.
On December 23rd, 2016, the defendant's assigned task color 1 was called requiring him to submit a urine specimen for testing. The defendant failed to submit a urine specimen on December 23rd, 2016, as directed per the task individual testing compliance summary dated December 30th, 2016. Attached to the warrant, there was a copy of the task compliance summary report dated December 30th, 2016, showing that the color plum came up on December 23rd, and Mr. Grimes did not submit a sample.
Okay, back to you, Mr. Grimes. What is false about that allegation?
Well, first of all, who did you say my parole officer is? Because my parole officer is Mr. Plendo, P-O-L-A. That's my parole officer. I don't even know this guy, this gentleman speaking here.
Well, the person reading the allegation right now is our in-house hearing officer. He's a community corrections officer. He represents parole, but he's not your parole officer.
All right, okay. Well, the allegation that's made here on the 23rd, when my color came up, that's the same night I was arrested other allegations that I'm here on today. I was arrested the same day.
Okay.
That's why I didn't show up to make swap any urine sample that day.
Okay, sir. Thank you. We'll go ahead and move on with the second allegation, allegation number 2. And keep in mind, this is a very long statement. And before we move on, let me double check. Because I think that allegation 2 and 3 are virtually the same, except maybe a little bit of extra information. So we'll try not to read this entire statement in its, you know, twice. But we'll hear the whole statement now from Mr. Westby.
According to Tempe Police Department Officer Neff, the following incident occurred on December 24th, 2016. At approximately 052 hours, Officer Neff responded to the Mill Q Club located at 607 South Mill Avenue, Tempe, Arizona, in reference to subject causing a disturbance at that location. Comments on call indicated that a black male subject described as being approximately 6'3" tall, wearing red shirt, blue jeans, and red shoes, had gotten into a security's face and tried to hit the complainant. Three security staff were holding the subject down outside of the bar. He arrived on scene at approximately 053 hours. Arriving with him at that time were his bike partners, Officer Berman and Officer Perkovich. All three of them were wearing regulation Tempe PD bike officer uniforms and riding fully marked Tempe PD bicycles. Upon arrival on scene, he observed a large crowd had formed near the entryway of the Mill Q Club temporarily blocking pedestrian foot traffic from walking north to south on eastern sidewalk of South Mill Avenue. They also observed that three uniformed security staff from Mill Q Club were holding down the suspect, later unidentified as Charles Grimes, the offender. Upon arrival, Jeffrey Barbera, Mill Q Club manager, instructed his security staff to maintain control of the offender, not wanting his staff to let the offender go, as TPD officers attempted to detain the offender. At the time, Officer Neff got down on his knees, got the offender's attention, made eye contact with him so that the officer could effectively identify himself as Tempe Police, and gave the offender specific instructions, informing the offender that he was going to be placed in handcuffs. At that time, with the assistance of security staff, the officers Berman and Perkovitz then placed the offender into handcuffs. Officers Berman and Perkovitz then escorted the offender to the curb while he remained in front of the club to contact the other involved staff members. Officer Neff initially spoke with Jeffrey Barbera, club general manager, then with Christopher Harper, club manager. He wanted the following information pertaining to the incident with the offender. At approximately 050 hours, the offender was located inside of the electrical room of the club by security staff. The room is an area only for access by employees, and the club stores cases of non-alcoholic beverages inside this room. When the offender was initially contacted and confronted, he was carrying a case of Red Bull on his shoulder that he was attempting to leave with. At that time, Harper, the manager, was called to the electrical room by several security staff, including Nicholas Scanion. Harper informed the offender that he needed to put down the case of Red Bull as it was not for sale. Harper and the offender had a brief conversation about the case of Red Bull, and during the conversation, the offender alleged that he spent $500 at the club and purchased the case. Harper knew that to be untrue and informed the offender that the club does not sell cases of Red Bull. The offender eventually put the case of Red Bull down, and after being advised that he needed to leave, was escorted out of the establishment. Once outside the establishment, Barbera was standing behind Harper while the offender was being informed that he was banned from returning to the club. At that time, the offender became increasingly agitated and argumentative with Harper. At one point during the exchange, after Harper had told the offender over and over again that he needed to leave, and even after informing the offender that he, quote, needed to leave now, was going to be arrested, the offender made the following statement to Harper, quote, fuck you, I'm going to beat your ass, end quote. At that time, the offender made a fist with both hands, signaling pre-fight indicators of his behavior and attitude, a punch towards Harper, causing Harper to fear that he was about to be assaulted by the offender. As that occurred, several security staff immediately took the offender to the ground to prevent any assault that was about to happen. Officer Neff spoke with Nicholas Scanlon, club security, who actually been the security staff who initially contacted the offender at the electrical room and learned following information. When Scanlon was escorting the offender out of the establishment, the offender turned to Scanlon and stated the following, quote, dude, if you try to kick me out of here, I'm going to fucking kill you, end quote. He continued by stating, quote, I'm going to get my boys, and they're going to come back with a gun and kill you, end quote. Scanlon stated that he felt threatened by the offender's comments and was willing to aid in prosecution. The incident involved the offender caused a serious disruption to the flow of business as several security and managerial staff were forced to stray from their assigned duties to deal with the offender. The incident at the entry exit way temporarily blocked an entry and egress from the bar and caused staff to stop checking IDs, which forced them to not allow more patrons into the bar at the time. When the offender was taken into the ground, the incident blocked the sidewalk for approximately 1 minute, not allowing foot traffic to walk north or south. Following interviews with the aforementioned personnel, Officer Neff returned to Officers Berman and Perkovich, who were staying with the offender. He observed the offender while speaking with the officers had bloodshot and watery eyes, slow and slurred speech, and a distinct odor of intoxicating beverages on his breath and body. As MPP detention and transport arrived, Officer Neff finished his initial contact with the offender. The offender was booked felony in custody and held temporarily in the Tempe City Jail until turned over to MCSO for violations of ARS 13-2904A1, disorderly conduct, class 1 misdemeanor, violation of ARS 13-1203A2, assault, class 2 misdemeanor, and violation of ARS 13-1202A1, threatening, intimidating, and class 6 felony.
And if I'm not mistaken, allegations 2 and 3 read virtually the same?
That would be correct.
Okay. Mr. Grimes, you heard the allegation read in its entirety, and you had made reference to your parole officer. This was written by Officer Paulo. So, what is false about allegations 1, 2, and 3, sir?
Well, first of all, allegations 1 is false because I was never arrested for...
Oh, I'm sorry to ask you about that, but go ahead, sir.
I was never arrested for stealing nothing. On the body cam, the officer interviewed Jeffrey Barber, the general manager, which he told the officer that I tried to purchase something and that I didn't try to steal anything. Second, the second allegation was made that I took my fist and lunged towards someone. When the officer arrived, clearly the security was on my back and I was facing the way when I was walking out of the club. So clearly security was on my back. I wasn't even facing them or to even make a gesture to even fight with them. I was doing as I was told, which I was trying to buy a case of Red Bull, which they told me it wasn't for sale. Which when the manager came, he told me to put it down, which I did so. And as I was leaving out of the club, they escorted me out of the club. And then when we got outside, they said, we need your ID. And then when I tried to walk away without giving them my ID, they threw me to the ground. So the allegations of me trying to be violent with them or trying to steal anything or commit any crime whatsoever, knowing that I'm on parole, that's be false. The reason why the claims to be false is if you look at the body cam on this investigation, the manager, Jeffrey Barber, clearly stated that he didn't see an assault, but he was standing behind Harper as they exited the club. He clearly stated that he didn't see an assault occur or that no assault happened. When he was re-interviewed on a deposition, which I have, when he was re-interviewed, he said that I assaulted the officers on the deposition that I have with his testimony done on the deposition. You can retrieve it from bond investigation.
Well, sir, just so that you know, we're not here to try that case. We're here for your behavior while you're on parole. So what I'm going to do is this. We don't get into too much detail during the first phase of this hearing. So I'm going to go ahead and make a motion to pass from phase one to phase two. And then we'll continue the hearing. What's that?
Okay, can I just add, originally, all the three charges that I was on, originally was misdemeanor charges. When they took me to Tempe Town Police Station, the charges enhanced because they said I threatened as a gang member. And when you threaten as a gang member in Arizona, it goes to a felony six. All my original charges was misdemeanors.
Okay, sir. I'm going to make a motion to pass from phase one to phase two. So if you'll just sit tight for a moment. I'm going to make a motion, and that is based on the information provided to this board in warrant number 2017W0002, as well as information provided by the Department of Corrections. I move to find Mr. Grimes delinquent as he violated the terms and conditions of his supervision that he may have or have lapsed in the criminal razor company.
Second.
Great.
Agree.
Seconded by Ms. Rittenhouse, agreed upon by Dr. Wright, Mr. Johnson, and Mr. Neal. Okay. Mr. Grimes, back to you. We're going to continue the second phase of the hearing. As I explained, this hearing is in two phases. And I think it's a good time to point out, sometimes it gets a little fuzzy, that it sounds like that's where the hearing ended, but that was just to determine whether or not you were in violation of your terms of supervision. But this is the important part of the hearing, and that is where the board decides whether or not your supervision should be continued or revoked. But before we move on, please stand by, as Mr. Westby, our community corrections officer, is going to give us additional background information regarding your case. We'll just remain on the phone. We'll come back to you shortly for questions. We'll make a quick review of your case supervision summary, and you'll be able to speak to the board in detail. Okay, sir? Thank you, Mr. Grimes. Mr. Westby.
On October 14, 2016, Mr. Grimes was released from the Arizona Department of Corrections. He was arrested May 23, 2018 by the Fugitive Apprehension Unit on tech violations. He was back in DOC custody May 23, 2018 with an adjusted community supervision end date of December 10, 2018 which reflects 179 abscondings. Current conviction, 2008, marijuana violation, 1 year. 2008, armed robbery, 10 years. He has no prior convictions. This is his first term in DOC. CUIR score, 3.3. Mental health score, 1. Substance abuse score, 2. STG gang information notes. He's an admitted member of the Gangster Disciples Chicago Criminal Street Gang. He has no prior terms of supervision. His disciplinary violations are moderate, with drugs and violence noted. Other arrest, 1999, aggravated assault, Illinois, felony conviction, state prison. 2005, aggravated assault, Illinois, felony conviction, probation. 2006, kidnapping, Arizona, disposition unknown. 2006, threatening and intimidating, Arizona, disposition unknown. 2008, assault with a deadly weapon, Arizona, disposition unknown. 2008, misconduct involving weapons, Arizona, disposition unknown. 2009, aggravated assault on a peace officer, Arizona, disposition unknown. 2009, resisting arrest, Arizona, disposition unknown. His community risk score is a G6V6.
Thank you, Mr. Westby. Mr. Brown, as I stated, I'm going to make a quick review of your case supervision summary. It looks like that you were released from the Department of Corrections to reside at the approved location of Reborn Assistance, 2546 West Orangewood Avenue in Phoenix, Arizona. In October 24th of 2016, you were accepted at MRC Homeless Program located on North 29th Avenue in Phoenix. In November 21st, 2016, you were approved to live with your parents at 6609 North 54th Avenue, Unit Number 3 in Glendale, Arizona. So, Mr. Grimes, is that the last place you lived before you were arrested and returned to the Department of Corrections?
Yes, sir.
We have employment notes that you were working with Jackson Car Wash in Happy Valley, Phoenix, Arizona. That was confirmed by your supervisor. It says, however, on December 13, 2016, you reported that you were suspended for scratching a vehicle. So did you work anywhere else, or did you just continue to work there?
Yes, I worked somewhere else at Rock Automation on 84th and Van Buren.
And I'm sorry, what was the name of the location, sir?
I think 84th and Van Buren, or 84th and Belgium.
No, the name of the business, sir.
Rock Automation.
Okay, Rock Automation. Programming notes, you referred to task for random drug testing. You submitted 2 urine specimens which tested positive for marijuana. On October 21st and November 15, 2016, and those don't seem to be related to your allegations. You failed to submit a urine specimen on December 23rd, which is the instance in which you said was false because that was the day you were arrested. On November 21st, 2016, you referred to CAP for anger class, or CAP MRT for anger class. You were assigned to attend 24 2-hour sessions for a total of 48 hours. You completed 2 sessions, and then you got arrested by the Tempe Police Department. And then there's no further staffing. So I think that's where we can begin our discussion. It looks like that you were missing from community supervision for 179 days. So what happened in the time that you were missing, sir?
Well, in the time that I was missing, I was taken into custody on December 23rd, 2016, and I was placed in 4th Avenue Jail. I remained there under these allegations to November 25th. I have it written down right here, to November 25th. And upon checking my status and what was going on with my case, I received a bond. that I could have posted for $2,000. So I posted bond for $2,000 on 11/29, and while I was on parole. So it should have said that in the notes that you hold that I was released in an error, and Maricopa County released me in an error. Right down to the notes, it should say that.
And okay, you're telling me it should say that. Where should it say that, sir?
In the paper you have in your hand.
You're saying it says it somewhere and I'm not reading it, or there's something in there that you think should be in there?
It says that in there, right there, the warrant okay. Proof. Where the warrant proof says that DOC released it, looked at my hole in the error, and Maricopa County released me in the error.
Sure.
It looks apparently is, because I'm looking at the chrono notes here, and on May 14th, there was an entry from Pio Paolo, says, receiving information from the county prosecutor that defender was not in custody, MCSO as parole staff thought. It was determined that defender's hold was dropped in the error on or about November 25th, 2017. Pio Paolo had confirmed with the county prosecutor that defender had his next court appearance scheduled on May 23rd, 2018. Pio Paolo notified prosecutor warrant issuance. So an emergency entry warrant was issued. There is a co-warrant with this one here, which is an absconder warrant. So that way he could have gotten picked up, seeing the fact that the first one was a tech violation. He was released. He did not report to the parole office, nor did he inform Mr. Paolo or Department of Corrections staff that he was released from jail, whether it was an error. Or charges were dropped, then you have to report within 24 hours, and you also have to report police contact. So an absconder warrant was issued, which was the all-time stop date November 25th, 2017, when he was released. So that's what Mr. Grimes is probably referring to. Is
no.
This other warrant?
No, sir. No, sir, hold on, sir.
I want to hear all the information from the parole officer okay. First, and I have a question for the parole officer as well. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, so there's actually two warrants on here now. This particular one here would be 2017-W0002, the standard warrant, which is stating on here an allegation that the defendant was released in the error around about November 25th, 2017, after the defenders. EEOC poll was dropped in error. CSE is 6/14/18. That's before the all-time stop date was adjusted for abscond days. But that one is warrant number 2018-W1411. They had issued an absconder warrant after he was released in error because with the type violation, his whereabouts were known until MCSO ended up accidentally releasing him.
Okay, so Mr. Westby, MCAO accidentally released him, so it would have been incumbent upon Mr. Grimes to reestablish contact with parole?
That is correct.
Okay, so make sure I understood that.
And also, just another note, as far as violation one on there, when Mr. Grimes was arrested, was shortly after midnight on the 24th. He stated he was arrested on the 23rd when his color came up. That was actually the day that he went to this bar in Tempe. He was arrested that evening after midnight, so which was on the 24th at approximately, I think it said 052 hours, which would be shortly before 1 a.m. So he was not, him being arrested did not prevent him from being able to drop a UA on his scheduled day.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Westby. Now back to you, Mr. Grimes. I didn't mean to interrupt you earlier, but it was important that we got all that information, so you were about to say something.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So I was released from Maricopa County Jail in the era. On the day I was released, when I got home, I grabbed my iPhone 6. I called my parole officer. This is what the exact words from Mr. Paterno as I spoke to him that day. I said, sir, I've been placed on bond. I still got this case. What do you want me to do? His exact words was, I'm parole officer, can't do nothing until your case is determined with. We don't know if I'm going to make a decision to violate you or to send you to DOC or violate you until your case is terminated. I guess my parole officer was under the assumption that I was still in custody all the time. My parole officer, he never expected me to report to him because my phone number never changed, my address never changed. I was still at my mom's house all the time. I'm still working. I maintained it working and things like that. And while I was out of custody, I reported to the bail sponsor. Bless you, sir. I reported to the bail sponsor twice a week. I reported once a month in person to the bail sponsor. And they checked your status every month from November to May. And he checked my status every month on the computer. No warrants was issued. No absconding charges brought up from the parole officer. And I was never supposed to be released in the first place because when you're on parole and you pick up a new case, they put a hold on you. So I was released in an error. So my parole officer probably was under the assumption that I was in custody all this time. Now, as I was doing this for 6 months from November until May 23rd, as I was doing this, checking in with the bail sponsor, once in person, you pay a $30 fine, and twice a week, every week for 6 months that I was supposed to abscond. As I was doing this, I was also going to court and showing up to my court dates. Now, the prosecution got mad because I filed, well, we're going to get into why the prosecution contacted my parole officer. The prosecution contacted my parole officer and told them that he's showing up out on the street, out on bond. How is he out on bond showing up for his court dates? Then the parole officer decided to issue a warrant. I have it right here, May the 14th, they decided to issue a warrant then. And then they said I scammed then by not maintaining contact with my parole officer then. It was no reason for me not to contact my parole officer. I'm important to two agencies. I'm important to the bail sponsor and I'm important to the court as directed. There's no reason for me not to maintain contact with my parole officer unless my parole officer gave me a verbal commandment, which was he said. He can't do nothing until my case is determined with. But under the assumption that I was being held in custody all this time. So, I was told. I didn't know that I had to report to my parole officer, even though I signed that on line 2 in this state, I must maintain contact with my parole officer, which I did. And I was reporting to these agencies, the parole, the bail sponsor, twice a week, one time in person a month, and I was going to every court day. Now, if I abscond or was on the run, why would I walk in a court building full of police officers? And knowing that I abscond or knowing that I violated my condition terms, my case was not to be, my case is still going right now to this day, which is going to be a misdemeanor charge once we get this statement as a gang member off me, because I'm not a gang member. I've never been in a gang. I don't know where they have these allegations from. I'm not a gang member. So today, I just want to let the board know that I did everything I was told to do. From the moment that the security guard told me to put the case down and I offered to pay for it and he told me to walk out. The only thing that I didn't do, as y'all said, or admit, or I'm wrong of, I did do. They said I didn't maintain contact. I called them as soon as I got out of Fort Howard jail. I called them that following Monday. I called them. I made sure I called them and he told me, under the assumption that I was still in custody, because once you catch a case, they cannot release you because I'm on parole. They released me in an error. They found out that I was out for 6 months. because it was getting close to my end date. Then they put a warrant out on me because the prosecutor called my parole officer and they put a warrant out on me. Now they want me to do the 179 days for their mistake. And that's just all I want. I just want the board to know that I didn't do nothing wrong to violate my conditions. I did everything I was told to do.
I appreciate that, Mr. Grimes. I'm not going to try to turn this into an argument. Again, I want to, like, restate. We're not here to try the case that's pending. And it sounds like that it's pending. That's a different part of the criminal justice system. And the four allegations that are on this warrant, none of them are absconder charges. Certainly, those days are in there because you were missing. I don't know the whole story as to how you were released when you were on parole. You talk about an error. Again, I think that's yet a different part of the system. But I have additional information here from the parole officer, so just hold on for 1 second. Mr. Westby, what did you want to add?
I'm seeing that there was a note here, and it looks like apparently after it was located, or after he was arrested, it says senior prosecutor, this is on May 23rd, so that would be the day that he was arrested by the Fugitive Apprehension Unit. And it says senior prosecutor Rich received an email from FAU investigator Malillo, which stated that 2 days of surveillance revealed that the offender was not living in his mother's house, and a search of a residence did not turn up any evidence of a young male residing at the residence. At the time of the offender's arrest, he instructed his girlfriend to clear all of their property from the hotel room and bring it back to his mother's residence. So there are no notes here from Officer Paolo or from his supervisor, Senior Officer Rich, that there was any contact with Mr. Grimes in Community Corrections. And plus, as far as trying to contact him, having contact with a bail bonds, and there's so many bail bonds agents, in the valley, we can't locate offenders by contacting bail bondsmen. The responsibility is on the offender to come in, and they have to post conditions report in person after the release. There's no notes here of any messages that were left, otherwise there would have been an indication for him to be directed to come in person so that we could find out where his residence was.
I have two follow-up questions that Mr. Westby and then I'm going to turn over to my colleagues to see if they have any questions because this is an interesting case. This doesn't sound consistent in my experience as a board member, but if an individual made contact with the parole officer saying that they were released, it would seem to me that if someone was arrested and put in Maricopa County holding and they came out, they called the parole officer, said I was arrested, I've been released, it doesn't sound consistent that a parole officer might say, well, there's nothing I can do about it right now until your case gets settled. That hasn't been my experience, so.
That is true, and I'm looking at the notes here. This was a supervisor, Senior Officer Rich, that received the information that Mr. Grimes was released in error. The notation was not from P.O. Paolo. And per policy, is anytime anybody's released, whether it's a misdemeanor, charges are dismissed, whatever, they have to maintain, they have to come in. Because of the length of time that had passed from when he was originally arrested, half a year had gone by at that point, he would have had to report to the office, he would have been directed to come in. So if he said that he was released, if it was after his community supervision ending, he has no ties to the Department of Corrections. But at that point, he still had until June 14th of 2018, so he was still on supervision. So he needed to report to the office within 1 business day of his release.
Thank you. The other question I had was that I'm under the impression that this case is still pending. We were given several legal documents that I attached here from one of the supporters. This case is still pending, correct?
That would be correct, to the best of my knowledge.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Westby. Any questions from fellow board members? Yes, Mr. Johnson.
I'm just trying to understand. So we have a lot of documentation here, but what was the purpose of bringing this document, having this documentation for this hearing? Sir, Mr. Grimes?
Well, the purpose of having this documentation for the hearing is to show that our CDs in the era that I was never supposed to be released from the county jail in the first place, and that now the prosecutor called the parole officer, and now the parole officer waited 6 months, not December 23rd to file a warrant, not January to file a warrant, not February to file a warrant. They waited all the way 6 months, which they knew where I was. The reason why our stuff was in a hotel, me and my fiance just lost our daughter, and we was moving her stuff, which I have the risk from the court to travel. We was moving her stuff back from Missouri and back and forth. That's why our stuff was being moved at the time. In February, we all had lost her. But I was out in February, I was out in May, and this documentation is just to show the board that I did nothing wrong. I was never supposed to be released in the first place. Now, they made an error. They're trying to correct it and say, well, Charles, you're supposed to report it, which I did. And I called my parole officer verbally. He me and him had a conversation. He never instructed me to come in one time under the assumption that I was in custody. Anytime someone gets arrested on parole with a new case, they have a hold put on them by parole. They cannot make bail. So under the assumption, he thought I was being held all this time. He never knew I was free. If he would have known I was free, he would have made me report earlier.
Okay.
He gave me a chance to report. But he thought I was incarcerated. And when he found out from the prosecutor that I wasn't incarcerated, sir, that's when the warrant was issued. So 79 days, they sent out a scam. I never scam. That's why we're here today with these allegations that I scam. Then they bring up my charges, which is all misdemeanors. Then they make these allegations because they made a mistake. Now all this paperwork and documentation is confusing the panel, and we sit here today because Maricopa County and DOC released me when they didn't supposed to release me. Now they want me to do the time under a federal law guideline stating that if I'm released in the error, I can't. It's impossible for me to serve time on something they made an error on.
Okay, so maybe I'm just not saying it right, because I don't see the allegations as is. This never happened. Nobody missed.
No.
So they don't have you as an absconder in the allegations. You're not incarcerated at least. Based on this one, there's no absconding in there. So my question to you is, this whole arrangement, what you're in custody for, involves this incident in Tempe.
Yes.
Okay, so what caused this, just real briefly, what caused this disturbance? That was that this, I don't know, was this a bar or pool thing or what? What was it?
Well, the case is still being determined now, and these are misdemeanor allegations. I'm on felony parole. These are misdemeanor allegations.
Okay, no. Well, wait a minute, because the documentation, all of the documentation that we have here, and the last time, all the documentation is in the Superior Court of the state of Arizona. All misdemeanors would go to a city court. They would either go to Tempe Justice Court or Tempe City Court. But the only cases that would go to Superior Court is a felony case. So they have to be some type of felonies. They're not misdemeanors.
Yes, they charged me with a felony six, and they charged me with a felony four burglary.
Okay.
But this don't have nothing to do with my parole, because if I was remaining in custody until June 14th, my parole would be over. If they would have never released me in the interim, my parole would be over. This, see, I understand what you're saying, sir, that that's a violation to pick up these charges. The only thing I'm trying to get the board to understand that is my parole, June 14th, it ended. And that they're trying to make me do the 179 days that they released me to have on. That's all I'm trying to get the board to understand. I understand what you're saying about that. I understand that, sir.
Okay, so I saw...
I'm trying to get the board...
I saw a document. I saw a document.
Go ahead, sir. I'm sorry.
So I saw a document in here that had you released to the Maricopa County, that released you to Maricopa County for the purpose of going to court. So are you saying that when you got that release, you should have been, that would have counted as your time? Because I think that even if you get released to the county jail, it doesn't, and Mr. Westby, maybe you can answer this, or you missed it or not. So if he gets released to go to county jail, to the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office to go to court, does his time for DOC stop when he's released?
His when he's in custody, whether it's in DOC custody or whether it's in a county jail, his time is still going. It's when he's released and his whereabouts are unknown, and he's avoiding supervision, that's when the time stops. So the time that he was released from the jail on November 25th, whether it was an error or whether it was deliberate because charges were dropped, for example, it was his responsibility to maintain contact with his PO. So his time stopped then. While he was in jail, his time is still... It was still counting to what he owed.
So in that time stopped when he got released, whether it was accidentally or whatever the reason.
Right, because of the fact that he didn't report to the parole office. And so when the PO found out, when they were contacted by the prosecutor on May 25th, that he had not come in, that's when they had fugitive apprehension to do a search for him.
Okay, all right.
May 25th, sir. They said that I missed December, January, February, no warrant issue. March, April, May 25th, when the prosecutor called, they put a warrant out on me. Now they want me to do the time because they made an error. And I have to replace that time in here away from my family till December 10th. That's what the whole argument is. If I would have been in custody, I know you guys been through this before. Guys catch cases, they on parole, they not allowed to make bond. That's not my fault. Now, I call my parole officer. That's what I'm here to tell you. I know I'm supposed to make contact with my parole officer. I called him. He was under the assumption that I was in custody. He never said report because he thought I was in custody. He didn't find out I was out of custody until May 25th. So I just think this time should count because I went to court as I was told to. I reported to the bail sponsor as I was told to. I just think this time should count. I don't think I should have to do 179 days because of an error. And he's saying now, okay, since you got out, which I never supposed to get out, he said, okay, since you got out, you're supposed to contact your parole officer. I'm better when he talked to him. He didn't tell me to report, but I'm reporting to the bail sponsor. I'm reporting to court. Then I'm going to the bail sponsor and report in person once a month. And I can't drive 5 more extra minutes over the bridge to report to my parole officer. That was never instructed to me.
Okay.
Because if they had known that I was out, when I came or reported to my parole officer, he took me into custody. Because they just said, you don't supposed to be out. But they didn't know that until May 25th. That's not my fault.
Okay, I understand what you're saying. I may not agree, but I do understand what you're saying. But the purpose that you hear before this board, and the only authority that this board has, is relevant to this warrant that you have here. When you were released, accidentally released, what your dates were, that's all up to the Department of Corrections. So we have no authority whatsoever over that. That's between Time Comp and the Department of Correction. The only thing that we can do is go over this information on the warrant. Now, what you referring to and we're spending this time on, I understand what you're saying, But this board has no authority to make a decision on when your time should start, when it should have stopped, whether you were released early or not released early. This board doesn't have authority to do anything on that. All we have is that there's a warrant and that you violated the warrant, and that's why you're before this board here. And so I hear what your argument is, but the argument is something that this board has no jurisdiction over the time over the time comp that you're actually doing. And that's what your argument is. Your discussion is that you're in disagreement with the Department of Correction as to the amount of time that you should have left. And that time should, you know, therefore you should not have to come before this board. But we can't make that, this board cannot make that decision. We have to go by what the Department of Correction is saying. And that's what I think, at least for me, that's my understanding where we are. And so we can't do anything. I did see where you were, you right to where you did report. There's a letter in here from the Bells Bondsman saying that you reported to the Bells Bondsman. It has the dates of all the court dates that you went to. It has that, I think if I remember right, it was two times that you were given permission by the court to travel out of state. That you had permission to travel out of state. I mean, it's in there. But what you're asking us, when this board has no decision on, we can only act upon this warrant that we have here to say that you violated. And the reason that they violated you was because of this. I didn't see any...
I understand what you're saying, and the warrant is for me coming in contact with the police.
Right.
Or me being disrupted at the business. But that is still pending. My parole, my supervision end date ended last month, sir.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I think, if I'm not mistaken, and I think this is just muddying the waters, but he was arrested before his SED, correct? So, I respect what you're saying, but you were arrested before your sentence end date. And that was
30 days. 30 days I was arrested. No, I was arrested May 23rd. So that's where the time to... That's where the time should go from May 23rd, so I should be able to spend, 3 weeks to June 14th in the custody, and it should be over with.
Well, so with all due respect, I think now we're getting kind of into a philosophical argument as to whether or not you think you should have done that time. You're pending the other charge, you were violated for these charges, and unfortunately we need to move forward with the... with the hearing. So,
Mr. Collins?
Yes, Mr. Johnson.
So, Mr. Grimes, you just hit it right on the head what the problem is. Is that the discussion is that you were arrested before your sentence end date, and you feel as though you should only have 30 days left, about 30 days left, instead of 190 days left. Is that right?
Yes, sir. Okay. I feel that the court is still pending, so...
Okay, let me just deal with that issue first. So, that issue, the 30 days, reference to 190 days, is not in the jurisdiction of this board. It's in the jurisdiction of the Department of Corrections and Time Comp. They're the one who certifies how much time you have left and when that time expires. They do that. This board does not do that. They certified and then send it to us and let us know. And so what I'm trying to get you to understand, as far as that, whether you get 30 days or 190 days, this board can't make that decision. We can't make that decision. You're going to have to work with your CO3 that's there and time comp with the Department of Corrections. And that's where that determination is made. We don't make that determination in this board. And even though the case is still pending, you still have a pending case. I think the last thing I saw here, it was continuing. I thought it said July 9th. Maybe I missed it. But I thought it was a July 9th. And then 29th. The 29th. Okay. So they're still pending, but whether that's you're found guilty or not guilty, you know, the violation is that you came in contact and you did that. And so that's what we're here for. And so I'm just trying to get you to understand. I understand what you're saying, but we just don't have the jurisdiction in this hearing to determine whether you should do 30 days or 190 days.
Can I read you something, what it said the board can do? It said, therefore, this time, it says, furthermore, during this hearing, the board may decide, under the Arizona Code of 31417, to not credit you with part or with all the time spent on community supervision for others. Is that true or not?
I'm not sure what you mean, sir.
I mean the Arizona Reserve Code 31417. It says to not credit me with part of the time or all of the time spent on community supervision. The parole board has the power to grant time served or to violate me and make me do the time spent discounted. Or assist
the
violation occur.
That's the parole hearing statutes, and that's one of the problems with the main changes. This is, he is not on parole, he's on community supervision, and it's a totally different issue. So that is, that will have no relevance in this hearing, sir.
Okay. Yes, sir.
Okay, any other questions from full board members? Yes, Mr. Newell.
This is just to put a few things to rest, especially in my mind. Sir, you keep talking about May 2016, 2017, or 2018. We're spanning 3 years here as far as dates go. And I'm trying to get it clear because you keep saying the prosecutor told the PO you were out of jail in May. Okay, I'm assuming it will be 2016, but then you talk about it's almost a year before a warrant issued for your arrest. So when did, just to make this clear, what year did the prosecutor tell the PO that you were out of jail?
2018.
Okay, this warrant we're dealing with today is dated January 3rd, 2017. Okay, this is dated not too long after you were arrested by Tempe Police Department. It's and this warrant we're dealing with today, like Mr. Johns said, has nothing to do with absconding or anything else. It's a violation. Well, did you or did you not drop a UA on the 23rd of December 2016? It's a simple yes or no. And I believe you said that you did not drop a UA on that date. Initially, you tried to convince us you couldn't because that's the day you were arrested. But so you did not drop that UA, violation of your terms and conditions. And the other three are allegations of your behavior during the incident that got you arrested. Not whether you were even charged with those. Not whether you've been found guilty of those. Because even if you're found innocent in a court of law, your behavior that night caused this. And you did not contact your PO immediately after the contact with the police department. Okay, so really, the issues you're bringing up are relevant to our hearing today. And we have no jurisdiction over time computation. Okay?
Okay,
so you understand that the argument's about somebody made a mistake, so two wrongs make a right. And one other question I have for you, did you or did you not sign your conditions of total conditions of release on November 1st, 2016. Did you?
Yes, sir.
Okay. You signed the terms and conditions. Okay, so you were aware of all the rules when all this happened. Thank you, sir.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Newell. Any further questions? Okay. I think we do need to move forward. Thank you, Mr. Board Chairman. We have a couple of supporters that are in the room. Will you both be speaking?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much. And whoever wants to address the board first. If you can help me move down the microphone.
Yes.
So that we can get her name on record.
You can just move the microphone. You don't have to move it.
Oh, it's nice if you can.
Well,
thank you very much, Mr. Westby. And then if you can state your name for the record.
My name is Lisa Burns.
And who would you like to show to the board now?
First of all, I'd like to say I'm Charles Grimes' mother, and I'd like to clear up the allegation saying that my son is a gang leader. We lived in Chicago, Illinois, most of our life. Yes, we was around a gang member organization, which was a project. I moved my kids up out of there. I worked hard, me and my husband both worked hard, to get them away from that gang activity. We moved to South Chicago, Illinois. From there, we moved to Phoenix, Arizona. Of course, my son did something in there. We're getting him to be incarcerated for 10 years. He paid his dues for 10 years. He got out. When I communicated with my son throughout the years when I was incarcerated, he promised me that he was going to be a changed son when he come home. I first didn't believe him, but when I saw the things that he was doing while he was incarcerated, when he completed all the programs he completed, when he got out, he submitted that he was going to be baptized. He began baptized. Fortunately, that day, before Christmas came, when my son was home, and that day, when his friend came from Chicago, all the way to Phoenix, Arizona, to see him, fortunately, that night, he took him out that night. Yes, my son did, probably had a couple of drinks. True enough, my son knew he just got out of jail, knew he just got a job, knew he was turning his life around. He was looking forward to seeing his children in Chicago. He hadn't seen his kids in 10 years, his mother in 10 years, his father in 10 years. Yes, he chose to go out there one particular night. And yes, he made a mistake by picking up a place, and they told him to put it down. He did put it down. His friend called me while they was tackling him on the ground and told me what was going on step by step. My son did not turn around. He did not put his fist up. I don't know how they got that information. He was tackling him, and I asked his friend to get his part in his phone and stuff and bring it home to me. Yes. Then my son was incarcerated. I was angry for a while. Yes, I was. He promised me, he said, Mama, when I come home, I'm going to do what I'm supposed to do. They lifted a hold up on my son, which my knowledge and his knowledge as well, that he didn't have to be put to know the probation officer. When my son came home to me, he was at my address all the while. I never moved. He was there. When he came home to me, the first thing he did was get what he said he did, reported his parole. The second thing he did, within 3 days, he got a job. The third thing he did, he went to church, got baptized. The fourth thing he said to me, he said, Mom, while I'm out here, I've done a lot of things wrong in my past, but I'm going to get back to society. My son took his hard-earned money that he made and went downtown, things downtown, and fed the homeless with his food. He made Easter baskets with the church, knocked on each and every door and gave Easter baskets out to the kids that was unfortunate that couldn't have one. My son was turning his life around on his mother. And my mothers wouldn't say anything, but it's coming straight from my heart. My son is the only thing that I have right now. I'm sick. I have 7 surgeries. My son came home. He done everything for me. I need my son back home. If you can just let him come home, get in a program, or even your house arrest, I will make sure that he will do this. And he will show you the change in him if you just give him the opportunity. Thank you so much.
Well, yes. Thank you. First of all, I want to thank you for appearing before the board today. You gave a very passionate account on behalf of your son. There was a couple things that I did want to make mention out of respect to you and before your son. Two things. One, we're not accusing him, this board is not accusing him of being a member of a gang. That's not our role. And number two, I know you had quite a bit of information to say about the case that's pending right now, and again, it's a totally separate part of the criminal justice system in terms of determining whether or not he should return to community supervision. So I just want to make sure that that's in context, but we do appreciate what you've shared with the board today. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
if you can sit there if you want, but that means you can sit at the podium, as long as you state your name for the record.
My name is Maureen Levesky. I met Charles just about a month after he first got out in 2016, and then you have that case about a month later, right before Christmas. Even during that first month, he had already gotten a job. We were going to church together, and he started attending some life leadership program events. Then he was in jail for 11 months, and then whenever he became his own lawyer, he checked the system and found out he could get out on bond. And as his mother said, he called the parole officer, but there was no one to report to, so he didn't feel he was supposed to report to anyone as far as parole was concerned. And he has reported, as I gave you the paperwork for his bond, and he attended every one of his court cases. So I don't know if that warrant was for absconding or just violating the parole, because I don't know all those details. But as far as absconding, that's whenever you're trying to escape something, and he wasn't trying to escape anything. I just want to say that I believe that Charles is a man of great character. He has worked really hard in these 6 months that he has been out to try to do everything that he can for his family and for me. He was staying in contact with his children in Chicago, doing FaceTime with them, even helping them with their homework. And then when my daughter passed away in February, it was really hard on both of us. She was only a teenager. And he stayed with me every single day, so I knew exactly where he was, and helped me through that difficult time. So I just want to say that if there's any opportunity to help him, I'm here to support him, and so is his mother, and we just want what's best for him. So I just ask, Lord, that you, Lord, would consider what is best for the community and for Charles. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. And thank you for appearing for this board, and please accept our condolences for your daughter. Sorry to hear that. Thank you. Okay, Mr. Grimes, we've heard quite a bit of information today. Please know that this is your hearing, and we have taken a lot of time to listen to all the angles on this case. We're getting very close to the end of the hearing. So is there a final statement that you would like to state to the board before we go into discussion? We only ask that you don't repeat anything that you've already told us. Again, we've had a lot of back and forth discussion, but is there anything else that you feel that is important for us to know or understand?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. First of all, I'm going to apologize to my family for putting them through this. I'm not Beyonce. And just want to apologize to society, because I truly believe I paid my debt to society already. I spent 8.5 years incarcerated for this sentence, and I did 11 months incarcerated in the county jail. I feel like that 5 months out of my life that I'm going to have to do, you guys find me guilty here today, that it's going to be a waste of taxpayers' money. Because not only is I'm trying to ready to go on and live for God and do something with my life for myself, I'm hurting my kids by being away, and I'm hurting my family. I mean, I've done 11 years. What 5 months is going to do to me? I mean, I tried my best to follow the rules and regulations of my supervision. I tried my best. And that's what I'm here today for. I know you said don't mention them before the police arrest me. They said I'm scared. But now the allegations being made, which being out there drinking at a club is a violation of my parole. Not reporting is a violation. These are the conditions I find to. But spending 6 months and for not taking a UA, I mean, you know, it's a lot of things going on in this world that not taking the UA that people do that's on parole. That's worship. Him hampering the business, I didn't hamper the business because that situation is still left ahead. These are misdemeanors of business, which will be dismissed sooner or later. All I'm asking today is that the board here find me competent to return to society, because I can help society more than being in jail for missing the UA or being in jail for not reporting. That's like 6 months for that. I mean, I know you guys got to make a tough decision today, and I know y'all probably never heard a case like this. But if y'all give me a chance in society, I promise y'all will never see me in front of y'all panel again. Because I'm a man of God, and I've changed, and I just want to live for God. And I just want to help homeless people and try to help society and be a productive member of society. I know it's hard to take care of with these allegations and all this paperwork y'all coming through, but that's not who I am today. That's not who the man is. That's sitting here before y'all today. I've changed. I'm going to keep on changing. And when I get out, I'm going to make a change. That's all I want to add. Thank you, Teresa. Thank you, Murray. I love y'all.
Thank you, Mr. Grimes. The board will be going into discussion now. It may sound like that we're speaking with you directly, but is the board discussing the case amongst itself before we come to our individual votes under the open meeting laws of Arizona? You're reminded that this board has not discussed this case before we walked into the hearing room, so all deliberation is going to be happening before you and in the open. We'll come back to you shortly with our decision, okay, sir?
Yes, sir.
The board is now in discussion. Fellow board members, I have to admit this has been, and I don't mean to make light of it by any shape of imagination for Mr. Grimes, but it has been an interesting case. We've heard quite a bit of information from Mr. Grimes. He has the support of his family, which I always find uplifting to see that people have support outside of the prison system, as well as additional information kind of filling in the gaps from our community corrections officer. And I certainly like take no pleasure in being cold or clinical, but for me at the end of the day, it still comes down, like all of these cases do, to the totality of the case, the totality, and whether or not somebody violated the conditions of their supervision. And as one of my colleagues stated earlier, the fact remains there was a failure to provide a urine specimen. There was police contact that led to an arrest. The police contact in and of itself and the behavior was enough to cause violation. I do want to respect that there may have been some sort of miscommunication between the county and the state as far as whether he was still in the system or not in the system, and perhaps there's something that Mr. Grimes can bring up in terms of time computation, which is beyond the authority of this board, but I am not finding him a suitable candidate for return to community supervision, but that's where I'll begin the discussion. I am certainly open to the perspectives of my colleagues. Thank you. Yes, Ms. Rittenhouse.
And I share your feelings, and I'm just also concerned by the fact that he had been drinking that night too at the club, and that's what led to the kind of failure altercation outside, and that's also a violation of his conditions of supervision.
Thank you, Ms. Rittenhouse. Any further discussion?
I do understand. I'm just not sure if at that time whether he really knew he was on parole or he was off parole at that time of the sentence end date hadn't ended. So I am touched by the testimony of his mother on what he's done since he got out, and the fact that he wasn't reported on his parole, but he did make all his court dates. He had his hearing. The court had given him permission a couple of times to travel out of state. There's a letter in there from the bail bondsman, which basically said they don't usually write these type of letters, but he's been a good client and he's reported and done all the things and made his monthly report to the bail bondsman like he should have, that he was doing some things that, well, he was doing a lot of things that he should have been doing. I would tell you that I do have a problem that although his friend did come from, Chicago, and they went out that night, he got into this altercation, which caused all of this problem. He just made a bad decision to go out there and get with his friend and hang out. And sometimes they have to make a decision, you know, when you're trying to do the right thing. Sometimes you have to avoid some different situations, and this wasn't one that he tended to avoid. So I'm just not totally, I'm understanding of his issue, but I do have some problems with him going out and getting involved in this incident, knowing that he would have been on half parole or what happened. He's still in the court. At least he knows that. So. Nah, he did. You know, he did violate. He made a bad decision. That's one of the problems. He has 5 months left unless he does something with time comp and they renegotiate his time. That's something we have no control over, but at least I think we have no control over. I shouldn't say that, but I think that, you know, we can take this time and just figure out what he wants to do, get his life together, understand what the circumstances happen when we make bad decisions. And, you know, we see people in here all the time. They wind up getting back with their friends and making bad decisions and getting themselves back in trouble. And this is certainly one of those type of situations.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Doctor?
In fact, he has a future before him, and unfortunately he did make some mistakes. And I think that, and it's unfortunate that some charges are pending, whether this is a felony or not, as Mr. Johnson pointed out, I think, earlier. This is Superior Court of Arizona, which means it may be a felony, but that's neither here nor there for this board. I think that I've just reemphasized what Mr. Johnson said, but with emphasis on what his mother said, and she said it in a way that nobody could say except the mother. And, you know, hindsight is better than foresight. He should have told his friend from Chicago to go out and have a good time, and he should have stayed at home. Whether he was on parole, supervision, whatever. He's a new Christian. He's joined the church. He's trying to do good. He was doing good. And sometimes all of us have to learn to say to our friends or relatives, I'm not going to do it. I can't go out with you anymore. I'm sorry. As I like to put it, sometimes it's necessary to say, well, if we're going to go out with you, we'll be ready to go to church in the morning. We'll be ready to go to the library and we'll work together. But we're not going to a nightclub. And I have nothing against nightclubs. I'm not against any club. But when you tie it up with the judiciary system, you have to be very careful. And he made a serious mistake that he will regret the rest of his life. But I feel that whenever he gets out, he will be successful. He will carry out those goals that he set for himself to help others. So that's all I'm going to say at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor. Any further discussion? Okay, we're going to make a motion, and that is...
Can I ask something before
you continue
here, sir?
Sir, we are in discussion right now for the vote.
Okay.
If you have something you want to add at the end, I'll add something at the end too, but we need to make this motion and get through our vote. So based on the information provided to us in warrant number 2017W0002, our discussion with Mr. Grimes as well as information provided by the Department of Corrections, I move to revoke community supervision as Mr. Grimes was delinquent, violated terms and conditions of supervision, and had lapsed or was about to lapse within the Leisure Company, inasmuch that he did fail to provide a UN specimen, had police contact, was arrested, and is pending a case. And that is my motion.
Second.
Agree.
Agree. Seconded by Mr. Neal. Agreed upon by Dr. Wright, Mr. Johnson, and Ms. Rittenhouse. Mr. Grimes, your supervision has been revoked, and you will be released on or about December 10, 2018. We do encourage you to take advantage of these last months to put together a plan for your return to the community. We are gladdened by the support of your family. I think you made a very effective argument. I respect the argument that you made, and I'm going to encourage you to do this, and we're serious when we say this is beyond our control. Talk to your CO3 about the time computation issue. There may be some part of the DOC system in terms of how they calculate the time that we're not aware of. We voted on the violations in this warrant. So we do wish you a successful and safe return to the community. And you said you wanted to state something, so I wanted to make sure I gave you that opportunity.
Yeah, the vote was made. I just wanted to state that I was drinking alcohol beverages. It's okay, though, because the vote was made. It's in the police report. It was non-alcohol beverages. I was on parole. I knew I couldn't drink.
Okay, sir.
But the UA standpoint. I just want to say thank y'all for today. Y'all made me understand that I can't have room for error, and I can't have room for any thing that can cause me to stumble. And I must say no to that past life, and I must move forward from here. And I just want to say thank y'all for today. Give me y'all wisdom and y'all understanding. And I learned a lot from y'all. Learned a lot from my mom's testimony and my fiance. And I know what to do now in society. And that's all about. And thank y'all today.
Well, sir, before we close this hearing, I do wish you the best, and I mean it. So this hearing is concluded. No further discussion will take place. And thank you for appearing before this board today. Thank you, Mr. Grimes.